Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph by the Gemara. The Mishnah taught us the Shita of Rabbi Tarfon, which is during the Regel, you do not have to do Merikat Shtifa throughout the Regel. You only have to do Merikat Shtifa the day after the Regel, when the Regel has ended. And so now the Gemara wants to understand what's the derivation or what is the source for this position of Rabbi Tarfon. So the Gemara says, my time is the Rabbi Tarfon, the Amakra. Pasuk says in Parshat Re'eh, Ufanita Baboker, Valachta lo alecha, that you're going to go in the morning and return to your tent. So the pasuk in Parshat Re'eh relates to the Yomim Tovim that are listed over there. And it says, with regards to the Korban HaPesach, came a makom eshev char Hashem lokecha l'shemo, sham tizbach et haPesach ba'arev, kavo Hashemesh moitzeitcha mimitzrayim, ubishalta v'achalta b'makom eshev char Hashem lokecha bo, ufanita b'boker valachta lo alecha. So you're going to go in the morning and return to your tent. And then it ends, Shechi yamim tochal matzot. For 6 days you eat matzot. Uviyom hashvi yatzeret Hashem lokecha lo tasem melacha. Then the seventh day will be a yom tov where you can't do any melacha. The Gemara now quotes this as the source for Rabbi Tavron's position by saying akatuv asol lekulan boker achad, that the pasuk made all of them into one boker. Rashi over here says al korchacha boker shel chol kamar. When it says ba boker, it means the first boker of chol, bikari lei boker rishon. And it says that's the first boker, that's the first morning. So the first morning that's chol is Isru Chag, it's the day after Pesach. And so what the Gemara is seemingly saying from here is fanita ba boker is after the entirety of Pesach. Then you will go on that boker, you will go home. Now, even though there were seven bikarim, there were seven mornings between the time that you brought the Korban HaPesach and the time that you're going to be day of chol, nevertheless, it calls it the boker, the first boker that you meet. So basically, what it seems to be saying is that it's making it into a yom arichta, making it into one long day, and then the first boker that you bump into is the boker of Yisru Chag. That's the way that Rashi explains it. The Balei Tosafot are not comfortable with that explanation of Rashi, and therefore they offer an alternative, which is Nira Lefaresh. The Mashmalei Kulo Boker Achad Mishum, the reason that it calls them all one boker is because of the fact that it says, Zayin Tashlumim Derishon the Chagiga. Comes to the Korban Chagiga, you have the ability to make up for the Korban Chagiga of the first day, if you didn't bring it then, and all seven of the days. Yeshla Tashlumim Kol Zayin. It has the ability to make up all 7 days. For that reason, you look at it as being a single entity because of the fact that the Chagiga is allowed to be brought any one of the days. Even though the Chagiga is really an obligation of the first day, you have the right to make it up in all of the other 7 days. And for that reason, it's considered to be Boker Echad, one Boker, and therefore the morning when you have to take care of this or do the Merika and Shtifa is only the day after or the Yisru Chag. Now, the Panita Babo, first of all, the Pashtut HaPsukim is that Ufanita Baboker is the next morning, that you're going to go home. Whether that means the morning of Pesach itself, when you're going to go home, the Korban HaPesach is brought at night, the next morning you're going to go home, assuming that it's not too far for you to go. Or it means the first morning of Chol HaMoed. And how do you know that that's what the Pesach is speaking about? Because the Pesach afterwards says, Shesh Yamim Tochal Matzot, that you have to eat matzah for 6 days. So Chazal deal with, why does it say 6 days of Matzot when it's really seven? And so the Gemara learns from that, Kol Yatzah Min HaKlal. It teaches you that achilat matzah throughout Pesach is reshut. Just like the one day that's missing from here is reshut. So do all 7 days of eating matzah are reshut. That's what Chazal darshan from it. But the pashtut of pasuk is that the first day you need to be in Yerushalayim for the Korban HaPesach, and then ufanita la'olecha, you go back home, and then the remaining 6 days you eat matzot because you're no longer in the mikdash. The first day you ate matzot because you were tied to the Korban HaPesach, you were in the mikdash. When you go home, there's still another 6 days of the Chag, and that's why it says Sheshet Yamim. So the Pashtut of Pasuk, and what it seems from here, versus, and in contrast to what is said by Chag HaSukkot, V'samachtan lifnei Hashem Elokecha Shivat Yamim, that you have to be in front of Hashem for 7 days. By Sukkot, it sounds like you have to be there all 7 days, and then only return home after the holiday of Sukkot, really after the 8th day of Sukkot. Whereas by Pesach, you return after the 1st day. That would be the Pashtut of Pasukim. But Rashi clearly learns over here that there's this Boker Achad, which makes it that you're there the entire Pesach. And the Balei Tosafot equate Pesach and Sukkot. And therefore, they're trying to deal with whether it's really true that there's an obligation of Lina for the entirety of the Moed, or is there an obligation of Lina only on the 1st day of the Moed, or on the day that you bring the Korban. And so the Balei Tosafot speak about this with regards to the holiday of Sukkot. And then they conclude that it must be that it's for the entire holiday, which happens to be true by Sukkot. The Psukim really support that. But then he extrapolates that to Pesach and says Pesach has the same din, which is that you have to be there for all the days, and you only return afterwards. That this din of what's called lina, the obligation to stay over after you come for the regel, or after you bring your korban, it's a machloket in the Rishonim, in the Masechet Sukkah, as to what triggers the obligation of lina. Is it your Yireh Kol Zruchad Pnei Hashem Elokecha? Is it the fact that you appear and you come up for the regel, that's what obligates lina, you have to stay over? Or is it the bringing of the korban associated with the holiday that drives that? Because of that, you have to stay all 7 days until the end of the holiday. The Baal Tosafot feel that you have to stay all 7 days, and that's why they speak about the korban chagigah, and the fact that each of the days is a tashlumim for the korban chagigah. And for that reason, it generates an obligation of lina throughout the Pesach and throughout Sukkot as well. So that's not the Pashtut of Pesukim, but nevertheless, the Gemara over here is saying that they are equating Pesach to Sukkot, and saying that the Baboker is after the holiday. And if you do that, that's supportive of Rabbi Tarfon, that the idea that you only have the morning that you wake up and you have to deal with everything is the morning after Yom Tov. Matkifla Rabbi Chudvai Barami. If you really want to say that, in essence, time stands still throughout Pesach, and we look at it as a Yom Arichta, then V'chiyein Pigul Beregel, V'ein Notar Beregel. What happens to Korbanot that only have a day to be eaten, or 2 days to be eaten? Does that mean that the entire regel is viewed as a single day? Or if you have a machshevet chutz lizmano to do it after the time of the period, but if you do it during the regel, it's still the same day, because it's all Yom Arichta. So v'chitei ma'achanami, if you say, yeah, maybe that is the case. V'atanya, Rabbi Natan Omer, lo amar Rabbi Tarfon elozo bilvat. Tarfon only says that time stands still, or is considered to be a Yom Arichta for this din alone. There's no other din that this has impact on. So that can't be the explanation over here, that there's this consolidation of time of the regel, because of the fact that it doesn't apply to other dinim that deal with time with the regel. And so that can't be Rabbi Tarfon's explanation. Ella, Rav Nachman Amar Rav Vua. The explanation has to be the following. Damar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Vua, Ko Yom V'Yom Naseh Gi'ul V'Chaveiro. Each day is taking care of the previous day. The way that Rashi describes it over here is that once you cook the new item on the next day, it causes the original tam that was in there to be niflat, to be spit out, and then it's boleya, the new item. So Rashi claims that anytime you cook something new in the pot, while it's still not isur, when it's still het there, in that instance, it causes a displacement of all that was there before. So anything that was in the pot before is now displaced and is taken care of, and the new stuff that's in there is the newer item that you cooked in there. And therefore, as long as you cook the shlamim on the next day, shlamim zidim for shnei yamim v'layla echad, so as long as on the next day you cook a new shlamim, then you're going to be fine, because that causes displacement of the shlamim that's expiring, and the new shlamim will take its place in the kli, and you won't have a problem of tam of isur. So that's the explanation Rashi gives, but then he runs into a problem. What about a korban chatat, or other korbanot that are brought during the regel, that only have a din to be eaten yom v'layla? So how do you then cook it the next day and save yourself from the problem of notar, or the problems of the isur that is nivla b'kli? That's what Rashi is in the case of here. V'im bala v'shel chatat, zahir l'v'shel acharav shlamim bo bayom. If he cooks a chatat in this pot, he would have to then cook a shlamim on that same day to ensure that there's no problem, so that the new shlamim will displace the chatat that was done, but it has to be done on the same day. So Rashi believes that this works by a chatat as well. That's Rashi's view. There are those that believe that the din of kol yom nase giul chaveiro is only true by kodshim kalim and not true by kodshei kodashim. It only works for items that have a 2 day span or 2 day duration, not for things of shorter duration. And then obviously what Rashi says would not be the case. Rashi believes that it applies to a chatat equally, just you have to do it within that shorter duration. You have to cook something else in it in order to expel or expunge whatever is inside the walls of the kli. Although you could present a different possibility, which is the fact that every time you cook something in there, it's not that it displaces that which is in the kli already, but rather it weakens, dilutes, or is mevatel that which is there. And that would actually then mean that we are being mevatel the chatchila, the object that's there. And it's similar to what we quoted in the name of the Rashbo yesterday, that since these are very mevatel, there's a special dispensation to allow you to be mevatel the chatchila, a kula over here. And that could be the explanation, rather than Rashi's explanation that there's a complete displacement of the previous item that was absorbed into the walls of the kli. Chachamim omrim ad zman achila. Mai kamar. What are the Chachamim saying? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua, mamtim la ad zman achila, v'hadar avid la merika u'shtifa. You wait until the zman achila, and then you do the merika u'shtifa. Where do you know this from? Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Abba Yossi ben Abba Ktiv. The Pasuk says, and this we're back to Vayikra Vav again, and in Vayikra Vav, which has the source for Merikan Shtifa, it says, Ukli Cheres Hashet Bushal Bo Yishaver, Vim Bikli Nechoshet Bushala Umarak Vishutaf Bamayim, Ko Zachar Bakonim Yochal Ota, Kodesh Kodashim Hi. So Ko Zachar Bakonim Yochal Ota is juxtaposed to the Murak Vishutaf Bamai. So Ktiv Murak Vishutaf. Ktiv Kol Zachar Bakonim Yochal. So you have these sukim that are juxtaposed, and the problem is it's out of order. That these Harim or Zichrei Kuna have to eat before there's a problem of Murak Vishutaf Bamai. So why is it out of order? Haketzat. What does that teach you? Mamtim la ad zman achila. You wait for the zman achila to expire. Hadarvid la merika ushtifa. And then afterwards you do the Merikan Shtifa. So the juxtaposing it plus out of order teaches you that the Achila has an impact on the Merikan Shtifa. And that tells you that the Merikan Shtifa is governed by the Zman HaAchila. Now, what exactly it means, Ad Zman Achila, if you look in the Baal Yitosafot on the bottom of the Amud, he actually has a different girsa in the Gemara, and that's also reiterated by the Shita Mikubetzin in Od Bet, which is, Mamtim Lahem Kol Zman Achila. Our Gemara has Ad Zman Achila. But the Tosafot had a girsa of kol zman achila. And he says, in the Faresh, the Merikan Shtifa, kodem shasen utar. Says, the Merikan Shtifa doesn't happen while it's still able to be eaten. Kadesh lo yavo kodshim the beit psul. In order to prevent the kodashim from ever becoming pasul, so you have to do the Merikan Shtifa before the time expires. He says, that's incorrect. That's not the way to explain it. Because here it says, la achar zman achila avin Merikan Shtifa. After the Zman Achila you do it, because it says Kol Zman Achila. You wait the entire Zman Achila, and not only immediately afterwards do you do Merikan Shtifa. That's the Girsa of the Tosafot. But he says, there are Svarim that have a Girsa, the Mamtim Lu Ad Zman Achila, which is the Girsa that we have in our Gemarot. That would mean that you have to do it during the Zman Achila, and not after the Zman Achila. But he says that he doesn't think that's correct, based on other considerations, like Rabbi Tarfon Shita before. He says, Elavade lo chieva katuv ad achar shenase notar, till after it becomes notar. So Baal Tosafot has a strong view here that ad zman achila or kol zman achila means you only do the Merikan Shtifa post the expiry of this korban, and that's when you do it. And that's what the pasuk is teaching over here, that the juxtaposition of these two items tell you that the zman achila has to be completed before the Merikan and Shtifa is done. And the fact that it brings the Achila after the Merikan Shtifa is telling you that the Achila has impact on the din of Merikan Shtifa. That is, that you wait to do the Merikan Shtifa until after the Achila is complete. According to those that say that the Merikan Shtifa is done during the Zman Achila, so then the juxtaposition of the Sukkim are coming to tell you that exactly, that the Merikan Shtifa has to be done kol zachar b'konim yocholota. While they're eating it, you need to do the Merikan Shtifa. And that's how you have to explain the juxtaposition of the psukim. And that's limud that derives here that tells you the duration in which it is mutar to continue to use it. And then the point at which you must do Merikan Shtifa. And again, the Baal Tosafot or Toled in the Girsa of the Gemara, where they have the word kol or ad, would determine as to whether you do it before the expiry or after the expiry. Although the Baal Tosafot favor heavily saying that it's after it's completed, and not before the Zman has expired, and he brings evidence to that. Well, the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah says that the din of Shtifa Merika is during the Zman Achila, like the alternative view that is brought in the Baal Tosafot, and the Raivad over there questions that view of the Rambam and supports the view of the Baal Tosafot. We actually have a machloket here as to when the Merika and Shtifa needs to be done, whether like the Baal Tosafot after the expiry of the Zman Achila, whether like the Rambam during the period of time of the Zman Achila. Now, Mirika, kimirikatakos, Shtifa, kishtifatakos. Tanabranan, Mirika, Ushtifa, Bitsunain, Divrei Rabbi. So this, again, we had a question about the Girsa in the Mishnah as to whether Mirika and Shtifa was Bitsunain, like our Mishnah has. We saw an alternate Girsa on the side there, which said Mirika, Bechamin, Ushtifa, Bitsunain, which is Chamim, Omri, Mirika, Bechamin, Ushtifa, Bitsunain. So the question is, whose opinion appears in our Mishnah? Is it Rabbi? And therefore it's Mirka Shtifa Bitsunei, or is it the Chamim's position, which is Mirka B'chamim Mishtifa Bitsunei? My time with the Rabbanon. What is the reasoning of the Rabbanon? Midhave a Ge'ulei Ovdei Kochavim. It's similar to Ge'ulei Ovdei Kochavim. Now, the word Ge'ulei is used over here to reference to the Kelim of Midian. that when Bnei Yisrael conquered Minyan, afterwards they brought the kelim, the booty back, and then Moshe teaches them that they have to kasher it. That kol asher ba'esh, taviru ba'esh, anything that's used in fire has to go through fire. Kol asher yavar b'mayim, anything that was used in water has to go through water. So that's the process of kashering. And ge'ulei ovdei kochavim can be translated in one of two ways. Ge'ulei can mean from go'al, which means to expunge or expel. Or ge'ulei can be from the word go'al, which is to be disgusted or something that is disgusting. And the truth is that the translation of the word might impact on how you read what is going on over here. I'll explain that in 1 second. V'rabi amar lecha, hagala lo kamina. I'm not speaking about hagala. Hagala is a different din. Ki kamina l'mikav shtifa. The batar hagala. Hagala is the kashering of the kli is one din. Rikan shtifa is a totally separate din. Rabbananim kein lichtov kra. Then it should be used the same terminology again. O morak morak, o shutaf shutaf. You should have used the same word. My umorak vishutaf b'mayim. Why does it change the verb that is used over there? Shmamina, that there must be a difference between them. Rika b'chamin, shtifa b'tzonei. That's the distinction and why it uses two different words. Rabbi, iktiv umorak morak, havamina trei zimne morak. Just do it twice. O trei zimne shutaf. Kach tev umorak vishutaf, lomarcha mirka kimirikata kos. Shtifa k'shtifa takos. I mean, there's a distinction in between merika and shtifa. The type of cleansing that is being done by each of these items is distinct. One is merika, one is shtifa. And that distinction is what the pasuk is focused on. The chamim say that that's not enough of a distinction, and they could have used the same verb. So it must be that the distinction is something more significant, like hot water versus cold water. And that's their machloket. The Rabbanan think that hot versus cold is the distinction, whereas Rabbi thinks that the distinction is between merika and shtifa. Now, it doesn't mean that the Chachamim disagree that merika and shtifa is possibly the same as Rabbi, but they don't think that that is a significant enough difference to explain the differentiation in verbiage in the pasul. So now for Rashi, the way he explains the machloket here is Rabbi believes you have to kasher the kli, and afterwards you have to do merikan shtifa. Merikan shtifa, according to Rashi, means you clean on the inside, and then you clean on the outside. That's what he explained to us in the Mishnah. And similarly for the chachamim, the merikan shtifa is the difference between hot and cold. That means merikan is the kashering of the kli. Shtifa is the rinsing of the kli after you've kashered it. So it's not about inside and outside, it's the difference between kashering, which is chamin, and sonein, which is rinsing afterwards. That's the way Rashi explains it. And Rashi explains the word gi'ul to mean something that is polite, that is expunged from the item. So that would mean that the gi'ulei ovdei kochavim, the purpose of this is hagala, which means to expunge that which is asur inside of it. And therefore he reads the chachamim's position of using chamin as the kashering process. So you kasher the kli, and then you rinse it off afterwards. Rabbi says, no, you kasher the kli separately. And there's a separate din of merikan shtifa, which are defined, as Rashi says, by cleansing on the inside and the outside, the rinsing inside and out. Yesterday we noted the Rambam has a different shita over here, and the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot says that merika means to do a cleansing or full-fledged fundamental cleansing of the kli, and shtifa means to rinse it out. And that's how he explains the difference between merika and shtifa. And therefore the Rambam doesn't believe that the chamin over here is kashering. The question is, merika and shtifa, according to Rabbi, you do merikan shtifa, you do a fundamental cleaning, plus a rinse with cold water. He thinks that you have to do kashering separately. Chamim say you do a fundamental cleaning with the hot water, and then a rinse afterwards with cold water. But that is maybe premised on the fact that the word di'ul for him means something that is disgusting ma'us. Because the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot over here notes that the purpose of the cleansing, or the more fundamental type of cleansing, is to remove any mamashut, anything that's left in the kli that is still extant, because that can't be kashered. You have to remove any mamashut, anything that's real and physical that's in the kli. You can kasher a kli from tam, from flavor. Can't kasher a kli if there's actual pieces of whatever it is there. So the purpose of the cleaning is to get rid of that shamnunit, that fat, or those residual things that are caught in the kli. So that might be why the Rambam thinks that the chamin over here is not for kashering the kli, but rather to cleanse out any mamashut that's there. And so the chamin believe you need to use chamin. Rabbi says you only have to do tzonein. Right, according to Rambam, it seems like you might have to do the kashering afterwards, because for him, you can't get rid of the mamashut and then kasher, you can't kasher it beforehand because there's still mamashut there. In the way that it's written in the Gemara, it says hagalah first and then merikan shtifa. But that may not be the order in which he's saying. He's just saying that there are two different issues. There's an issue of hagalah, there's an issue of merikan shtifa. And I'm only speaking about merikan shtifa. I'm not speaking about kashering the kli. And you can actually see that in the Netziv, in the Merom Sadeh over here, he says, according to the Rambam, that the Girsa in the Gemara should not be a Girsa of where Batar the Hagalah, after Hagalah you do Merika and Shtifa, rather, El Hagalah lo Kamina, Ki Kamina the Merika Shtifa. Because of course, Rabbi requires Hagalah in Rotchim, but given the definition of Merika and Shtifa according to the Rambam, it would make sense to do the Hagalah after the Merika and Shtifa. Now, for the Rambam, according to the Chachamim, who don't require Hagalah, then you have actually a situation in which you have the Merika B'chamin, Shtifa B'tzonein. The Merika, according to the Rambam, is not Hagalah. It is this core type of cleansing. And the question is, how do you kasher the item in that way without any Hagalah? So the Achronim, over here, try to answer on behalf of the Rambam. The Radvaz suggests over here that it's a Kula in Kodushim, that we allow you to do that core cleansing with hot water. And then because of Noten Tam Lifgam, after the 24-hour period, we don't worry about the Tam that's in there. And we have a dispensation that you don't need to do Hagalah. Which is that the Chachamim, who normally disallow a Kli She'inu Ben Yomo because of a Gzeira Atu Ben Yomo, they suspended that Gzeira when it came to Kli HaKodesh. Others suggest that because of the Rambam's view that Merika Shtifa takes place during the Zman HaHeter, then if you already do this cleansing during the period of time of the Zman HaHeter, it actually will then be mevatel, whatever time is in there during the time of Heter before it becomes Isur. And there were mekil, like we have noted before by the Rashba, in these situations, the Gabe Kodesh. But in some way, you're going to have to explain the Rambam's view of the Chachamim as to why there's no necessity for Hagalah. And this Merikan Shtifa suffices over here. All right, next Mishnah. Bishelbo Kodoshim v'chulin. If he cooked in the pot Kodshim and Chulin, from the Mishnah, it's not clear that he did it simultaneously, although that would make the situation a little easier, because otherwise you might be running into problems of Isur. Here it seems to be there's an absorption problem and not a problem of Isur. Oh, Kodshei Kodoshim v'Kodshim Kalim. Or he cooked Kodshei Kodoshim and Kodshim together in the pot. Im yesh ben benotein tam. If there's enough to flavor the item, Hareya Kalim nechalim kechamurin shebehen, then the Kalim take on the properties of the more chamur. So in the case of Chulin, it'll take on the properties of the Kodoshim. In the case of Kodshei Kodoshim and Kodshim Kalim, the Kodshim Kalim will now take on the properties of the Kodshei Kodoshim, which means that it can only be eaten in the Azara, it can only be eaten by Zichrei Kuna, it can only be eaten in the Yom V'Layla, and not the Shnei Yamim V'Layla Echad. Because here there is Dotein Tam, so that affects the entirety of the package that's here. Ve'einan tu'unei merikau shtifa. They don't require Mikan Shtifa. It's a very difficult line in the Mishnah, and the Gemara will ask right away, what does that mean? Ve'inu poslim b'maga. And if something comes into contact with this item, after it becomes pasul, meaning the expiry of the Kodshei Kodoshim, or the Kodshim, if it comes into contact with it, it doesn't affect it. Again, which is very strange, it of course should affect it. So the Gemara is going to have to explain what is meant in the Mishnah. Rakik shenaka b'rakik. If you have a wafer that touches another wafer, or a chaticha b'chaticha, a piece that touches another piece, lo kol harikikim v'lo kol hachatichot asurim. Not all the wafers, or the entire wafer, or the entire piece is asur. In asur l'makom shebala. The only place that is problematic is where there was absorption. So it doesn't spread. The location where the absorption was, that's where you have a problem. Other than that, you don't have a problem. Now the Gemara asks right away, my Kamar, I can't understand or make heads or tails out of the beginning of this Mishnah. So the Gemara over here says, and the Girsa change over here is Hachi Kamar, this is what it's meant, and the Gemara basically does what in other places is called the Chesurei Mechsera. They basically revamp the Mishnah to make heads and tails of it, which is, Im yesh ben benotein tam, if they have notein tam, meaning that either the Kodoshim gave tam to the Chulim, or the Kodshei Kodoshim gave tam to the Kodshim Kalim, or Kalim nechalim kechamurim. Then the lighter one, whether it's the Chulin or the Kodshim Kalim, take on the properties of the other item. Vitu unim mirika ushtifa. And they do require mirika ushtifa. Uposlim bebaga. And then they are posel bebaga. If there's no tein tam, then the first din in the Mishnah is true, which is that the one that is more kal takes on the properties of the one that's more chamur. But that also has implications, which is to unim mirika ushtifa. Once the more chamur one expires, then you have to do mirika ushtifa in the pot. And once you've expired the one that is more chamur, in the case of Kodshim Chulim, it's the Kodshim expiring, Kodshei Kodashim and Kodshim Kalim, when the Kodshei Kodashim expire, even though it's before the time of the Kodshim Kalim expiring, that's already pasul, it's notar. If you come into contact with it, it's going to cause you a problem. That contact will be pasul, the item in which it comes into contact with, which is the pasuk that we have here in Perek Vav, once again, Koshei Gabi Psarai, Dash. Anything that comes into contact with it will become Kodesh like it, will take on the properties of the item. But then, Bechasuri Mechzerei is Ein Behem Notein Tam. If there isn't sufficient Kodshei Kodeshim, or Kodshim when it's the Chulim, to flavor the item, Ein Akalim Nechalim Kechamurim, then the lighter one doesn't take on the more stringent one's property. Ve'ein tunim rikash tifa, and they don't require rikash tifa anymore. Ve'ein poslim b'maga, and if you come into contact with them, they don't become pasul because it doesn't expire with the time period of the kodshei kodeshim, or in the case of the chulin the kodeshim, with the expiry of the kodeshim. Gemara says, I don't really understand. Nehi the kodshei kodeshim lo ba'u, kodshim kalim nibai. The Mishnah, based on the way that we've redacted it, now says that when you don't have no ting tam, that you don't need to do rikash tifa. At all, it sounds like. Gemara says, look, I understand when there's no Notin Tam, that you don't have to do Merikan Shtifa after the Kodshei Kodeshim expire. But at least after the Kodshim Kalim expire, you should have to do Merikan Shtifa. Because it's still Kodshim Kalim in there. So, Amar Abaye, my Eintunim, what does it mean they don't require Merikan Shtifa? The Kamar, Kodshei Kodeshim. That means that the Kodshei Kodeshim do not require Merikan Shtifa. Aval Kodshim Kalim, Tunim. Enochanami, once the Kodshim Kalim expire, that's when you have Merikan Shtifa. And then the last din of them not being posel b'maga is also only when the kodshei kodeshim expire. But once the kodshim kalim expire, then they will be posel b'maga. Rav Amar, Hamani, Rabbi Shimon. You have to take it literally. There is no merikat shtifa whatsoever. And it's the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, who we saw in the Mishnah on Daf Tzadihei Amud Bet, who says that the din of merikat and shtifa only applies to kodshei kodeshim, but does not apply to kodshim kalim. And therefore, duodu amar kodshim kalim in tunim mikash tifa. So if you don't need it for the kodshim kodeshim, because they're not notin tam, then you don't need it for the kodshim kalim as well, because there is no requirement of mika and shtifa. Although, for the psul maga, once the kodshim kalim expire, then there would be a problem of psul maga. So now, bishlom of the Rava, according to Rava, I know diktani, that's why there are two cases in the Mishnah. O kodshim kodeshim mikodshim kalim. It has the first case of Chulin and Kodoshim to teach you one din, and then it teaches you the second din, which is Kodshei Kodoshim and Kodshim Kalim, to teach you that there's no Merikan Shtifa whatsoever. Because that teaches you the din that there is no din of Merikan Shtifa for Kodshim Kalim. And that's different than the case of Chulin and Kodoshim, where, of course, if there's no Tam Kodoshim, there's no din of Merikan Shtifa because it's Chulin. But in the other case, we have Kodoshim. It's just a question of Kalim and Kodoshim. Over there, you would have thought it requires Merikan Shtifa. The second case comes to teach you that din, that Merikan Shtifa is not needed at all. El Abaye Tarte Lamali. According to Abaye, why is there a necessity for two different cases over here? Because they're telling you the same din exactly. So Tzriche, Ditana Kodshim Vechulin, because only you had the case of Kodshim Vechulin, Havamina Chulinu Dimivatle Kodoshim Delav Minayu. Maybe the reason that there is Bittul over here, and there's no Notin Tam, we say that it's as if the Kodoshim don't exist, that's because it's the equivalent of Min, She'enu Mino, because you have two different types. You have Kodoshim, and you have Chulin. So the Chulin is able to overpower, or to be Mivatel, the Kodoshim that are there. Aval Kodshei Kodoshim, Kodshim Kalim, Emelo. Since they're both Kodoshim, maybe it'll be deemed to be Min, Bimino, and therefore the Kodoshei Kodoshim are not be subsumed, or overwhelmed, or be Batel, to the Kodshim Kalim. Vidana Kodoshei Kodshim, Kodshim Kalim. Had you only brought that case, Havamina Kodoshimu, Da'alimi Levtulei Kodoshim. Kodoshim have the power to be Mivatel or other Kodoshim, because they're both in that elevated status, and therefore one can be Mivatel the other. Aval Chulin, which doesn't have that elevated status, Emalo, that doesn't have the capacity to Mivatel Kodoshim. Srichon. So that's why you needed both cases, according to Abaye. As opposed to Robo, you need both cases to teach you that this is really authored by Rabbi Shimon, and that the Kodshim Kalim don't require Merikan Shtifa at all. Alright. Rakik, She Nagabe Rakik, Tarabanan. So now we're going to darshan the pasuk that is found, again, in Vayikra Vav. Kol Asher Yiga. Says, anything that comes into contact, Bibsara Yikdash. Yochol Afilu Shlo Bala. You would think that contact itself is enough to then pass and create a psul in the other item, or pass on the properties of this item to the other item just by having contact, even if there's no absorption. Tamalomar bivsara. Kosher yiga bivsara. Bivsara means that in the basar. Ad shivla bivsara. Until you have now absorbed some of the basar or some of that item. That the basar now becomes a part of this other item. It has now absorbed from the other item. Yochol nagah b'miksat chaticha hei kulo pasul. You would think if it touches a portion of this item, the entirety of this item would be pasul. Tamalomar iga. The pasuk says kosh iga. So therefore, anogeya pasul. Only that which touches is pasul. Ka ketzat. So then how do you deal with this, or how do we resolve this? Kotechet makom shibala. You just cut out the place, or the area where it absorbed, so that the entire item does not become asur. Wherever there was absorption, that is asur, and you have to cut it away. If the item that was in contact with was pasul, it was an item that's still beheter, but it's more chamor, it's a more stringent item, then it'll take on the properties of that more stringent item. Rashi over here says, ad shivla bibsara, what is taught to you by this din? Why do I need you to tell me that with bliyah, that's what makes it asur? I mean, that contact's not enough, you need bliyah. What additional din are we learning from that? So Rashi tells us over here, kigon, what's an example of this? A mateich shuman chatat, someone who liquefies the fat of a chatat, sach mimeno tzli shel shlamim, and then he bastes a roasted shlamim with the fat of the chatat v'nivlabo, and it's absorbed into the shlamim. Umikan anu lemeidim. From here we have the principle, which is throughout Shas, the heter mitzdareif li isur, the heter which is now absorbed isur, it takes on the properties of the isur b'kodashim. V'ein lo mod mikan tam ki'ikar. You can't learn tam ki'ikar over here. She'ein ze tam ela mamash. Because the case here is not a case of where flavor is being passed. Rather, it's actual mamashut. It's physical properties that are passing from one to the other. So Rashi over here, first of all, says that the din of liyah teaches you of heter mitzdaref isur, which is, if you have shlamim here that are absorbing the fat of the chatat, that transforms the shlamim into a chatat. Even though the area of the shlamim is still shlamim, but once the chatat has permeated it, it changes it to be all have the qualities and the properties of the chatat. So if you eat a kazayit of the shlamim, it'll be deemed as if you're eating a kazayit of the chatat. So if it's pasul, then you have a problem of psul. If it is a chatat, and he's reading by zichrei kuna and the azara, that'll be true of the entire shlamim now, even though it's really a mix of heter and isur. Once the isur has permeated it, that makes it that it's heter mitzaref the isur and it's asur. But Rashi says, is not being said here, is tam ki ikar, which is that flavor is the equivalent of the object itself. Because he says that here it was fat of a chatat was put on shlamim, and therefore we're dealing with things that have mamashut, that are actual flavors, and not something that's just a flavor without any mamashut associated with it, intangible item. But the truth is that there is a din of tam ki ikar, that when you have flavor, it's the equivalent of if that item is physical properties or that of the tam that is absorbed in it. So many Rishonim disagree with Rashi over here and say that the din of tam ki ikar is also learned from here. And they point out that Rashi himself in Psachim and in other places says that this is the source for tam ki ikar. But over here Rashi, for whatever reason, says that the case is a case where he put the fat on the shlamim, and therefore we're talking about real negiyah, physical touching, physical contact, and then physical absorption of the chatat, and therefore it's heter mitzaref isur is the din that's learned here. If you believe that it's also about tam, and the yiga here means they come into contact and they pass flavor, then you could also learn tam ki ikar, which is what Rashi does in other places. Bivsara, the contact here that conveys the problem or the flavor or the din of this item is only true bivsara. Below bigidin, below ba'atzamot, below ba'karnayim, below telafayim. Doesn't apply to any of these other objects that don't have the capacity to pass flavor because they are solid objects or objects that don't have flavor in them. That's the sinews, the bones, the horns, and the hoofs. Yikdash. The pasuk says, kol asher yigah bibsara yikdash li'ot kamoha. That it will be similar to it. And then when it says yikdash, doesn't mean sanctified. It means it will take on the properties of that item. The item happens to be kodesh, so it'll take on the properties. But it could also be that it's pasul, and you're going to take on the properties of the psul. Haketzad, im sulahi, tipasel. If the item that you're coming into contact with is pasul now, then the item touching it will also become pasul. Vim ksheirahi, if the item now that you're coming into contact with is ksheira, tochal kechamur sheba, then you eat it, or it'll take on the properties of whichever one is more stringent over here. Amai, why is that true? Venete asei, velidchet lotasei. Why don't we have an aseir come and override the lotase? So as Rashi notes over here, the aseir is, da'achlu otam asher kupar vahem. the obligation of the Kohanim to eat the Kodoshim. That's the assay that we're speaking about here. And the lo taseh is you're not allowed to eat things that are psulim, because the Gemara learns in Psachim, kol shebekodesh pasul, anything that is pasul in kodesh, bakatub litein lo taseh achilato. The pasuk in Sefer Shmot teaches us that anything that is pasul has a din of a lo taseh, and therefore there's a lo taseh. So you have an assay to eat the kodeshim, a lo taseh because it is pasul. Why not have the assay to eat kodeshim override the din of the psul over here? First of all, as Rashi says over here, a mighty pasel mishum hai purta. Why should it be pasul for that small amount that is absorbed? So it's clearly here that the majority of the item that you are eating is something that otherwise would have been heter, and something that still has the mitzvah associated with it. So that's why the mitzvah is still intact, because the item that you're dealing with is rove in a sense, or at least a large part of it is something that you have a mitzvah to eat. So then the smaller part that now causes the problem because of the notein tam aspect of it, that's what we're trying to override. We're trying to override the notein tam of psul by having the mitzvah to say of achilat kodeshim. Why should that small psul or that notein tam passel the entire item when there's still a mitzvah to eat the item that isn't the psul or isn't the problem over here? That's number one. Bali Tosfot also narrow the scope over here and say, lav atochal chamur sheba parich. It's not asking you, then you should eat it like a shlamim. Da'idna havalei notar. Because at this point it becomes notar. Ve'ena se dokle lotase sheyesh bo karet. So you can't invoke a se lotase when you're dealing with a lotase chamur. A lotase chamur means a lotase that includes a chiyuv karet. Notar includes a chiyuv karet. So does pigul of chutz lizmano. Also involves a karet. So the Balei Tosfot over here, you can't be speaking about something that expired and is now notar, because that's karet. So that can't be the psul we're speaking about, and it gives examples that it must be other psulim that we're speaking about here that don't have a karet. Kiron shenishchata b'layla, shechted at night, landama, or chutz limkomo, makshev chutz limkomo, which are all lavin and not chiyuvei karet. So here you narrow down the scope of what the Gemara is asking about. Number one, as the Baitos point, it's only psulim that are not a chiyuv karet. And Rashi notes over here, it's in a case where there's heter there that otherwise would have a mitzvah of achila, and now it's being ruined by the notein tam of the psul. And so that's what we want to know. Why does the notein tam of the psul have so much power to block the assay that you have? The assay should be doche velo taase. So before we move on, the Gemara has an underlying assumption here that there is a mitzvah of achilat kodoshim. There's a mitzvah to eat kodoshim. That is not at all clear. And what exactly the mitzvah is in addition not so clear. The main problem arises in a Gemara that's found in Yoma, where many of the Rishonim speak about the sugya, which is in Yoma Lametet, and they speak about the distribution of the korbanot to the Kohanim before the time of Shimon HaTzadik, and the time period after Shimon HaTzadik, where there was no brocha in the korban. And so there, the Gemara says that the Hasidim, or the Kohanim, that were more righteous, used to be moshchim yedem. They used to not take a portion of the korbanot, because they'd only get a pull. They'd only get a bean's worth, and therefore they didn't take it. So the Rishonim discuss why did they not take the korban, or why is there no mitzvah to them to eat it when it is a pull. So the Rishonim line up in two different fashions. One, there are Rishonim that believe that there's only a mitzvah of ichilat kodeshim when you have a minimum of a kezayit. Like any other mitzvah or isur that's associated with achilah, there's a minimum requirement for achilat kodeshim that be at least a kezayit. Once there's a kezayit, then there's a mitzvah of ichilat kodeshim. Therefore, the Kohanim over there that got less than a kezayit, they didn't eat it because there was no mitzvah, because it's less than a kezayit, and therefore they were willing to walk away from it because it was a zman when there wasn't bracha. And the time that there was bracha, maybe the sviya was enough to deem it that there is some sort of mitzvah. And the Shagaz Aryeh proves from here that there must be a mitzvah on the entirety, or the consumption of the entirety of the korban, because of the fact that we see over here, despite the fact that there are many kezayitim in the korban of Pesach, or in the kodeshim over here, we still invoke the principle of say doka lo tasei. Why should it be that the assay of achilat korban pesach overrides the etzim lo tishbiru bo? You have other kezayitim in the korban pesach, accomplish the mitzvah that way. Then why do you have to break the bone to get to the moach? Or by the kodeshim over here, kodeshim have plenty of what to eat. Why do you have to eat the kezayit or the portion of the kodeshim that is isur involved with it? Must be, and that's what he's suggesting over here, that the mitzvah of achilat kodeshim is not just a mitzvah of achilat of a kezayit. Rather, it's a mitzvah to consume the entirety of the Kodesh, the Korban HaPesach, or the Kodeshim that are involved over here. Tosfot Yeshanim in Yoma says that by the Korban HaPesach, there's a din of Achilat Kizayit, and that's the mitzvah of Achilat Pesach, because that's an obligation that's on each individual to eat a portion of the Korban HaPesach. But by other Kodoshim, there's no obligation on any particular individual. There's an obligation on the class of Kohanim as a whole to consume the Kodoshim. There's no mitzvah on any particular Kohen to consume a Kizayit worth of the Kodoshim, but together or all together they have to consume the Kodoshim. And that way it differentiates the nature of the mitzvah of Achilat Korban HaPesach from that of Achilat Kodoshim in general. Chatam Zofer takes that concept of the Tosfot Yeshanim and applies it within Kodoshim themselves. And he says that they're actually two different mitzvot. If a Kohen eats a Kizayit worth of the Korban, then he is Mikayim the mitzvah of Achilat Kodoshim. If he gets less than a Kizayit, he still is Mikayim a mitzvah, not a personal mitzvah, not the personal obligation of eating a Kizayit worth of Kodoshim, but the class mitzvah, which is that the obligation, that which is incumbent upon all the Kohanim, to finish the entirety of the Kodoshim that are there. And together, as a joint effort, they accomplish the mitzvah to say of Achlu Otam Asher Kupar Bahem. But he does then note in another tshuva that it must be, based on our Gemara, that the din of Asei Dochalotas can only be in an instance where the Kohen is consuming a Kizayit, because the Isur that we're speaking about, if you want to be Asei Dochalotas, is a Kizayit's worth. And therefore, only if there's a mitzvah to consume a Kizayit worth of Kodoshim, can there be an Asei that overrides the Isur of consuming a Kizayit worth of Isur. But if you think that the mitzvah is even with the kolshu, any amount, then there's no din of the asei, but the lot asei. Because then you could accomplish the asei without violating the lot asei by eating less than a kizayit each time. And you'll never violate the isur, and you can accomplish the asei. And then there's no reason to invoke the principle of asei, doch lot asei. For that reason he says, it's almost a stira in what he said before, but therefore he says that the mitzvah of achilat kodashim must be a kizayit. You can reconcile within the Chatam Sofer and say that they're two different mitzvot. The mitzvah that is a full-fledged mitzvah to say is when you eat the kizayit, and that has the power to be asei dochalot asei. But the class mitzvah of the kohanim, even though they're performing a mitzvah, and they're mikayim a mitzvah once they've consumed the kodoshim, or in that joint effort together, nevertheless, there's not a personal obligation in any particular kohen, and therefore you can't invoke the principle of asei dochalot asei, even though there is a mitzvah to eat the kodoshim. It's not a mitzvah that is incumbent upon that individual, it's incumbent on the class of kohanim as a whole. But that would mean here, according to those that believe that there is a mitzvah only when there is a kizayit, that would mean that you have to be speaking here with a minimum of a kizayit in order that there is a personal obligation on the kohen to eat or consume the kodeshim over here. According to those that believe that even below a kizayit, there's a class obligation, that might still be a mitzvah to say that's sufficient to say, asei doche lo tasei over here. Therefore, the Gemara is asking the question, if you have that mitzvah, why can you not override the lota say of the psul? This sugya here has impact because there's clearly a view within the Gemara here that there is a mitzvah to say. The threshold of that mitzvah to say will depend on what you think the mitzvah to say of Achilat Kodeshim is. And I'll send out the Mikorot because the Rishonim and Achronim discuss this issue and argue about what exactly the core mitzvah is and what needs to be in terms of a say doch lotase, because also the lotase over here also is a lotase of achila, and therefore would have a minimal threshold of a kazayit as well. So the Gemara's question might only be about above a kazayit, because the Isra also only is a problem above a kazayit, just like maybe the achilat kodeshim is only a mitzvah when it's above the level of a kazayit. So Amarava, ein asay doche lotase shvimikdash. Rava says that there's no din of asay doche lotase when we come to the mikdash. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Ve'etzem lo tishberu bo. With regards to the Korban HaPesach, it says you may not break any of the bones of the Korban HaPesach. Shem Menasi Omer, that pasuk teaches you, actually it's an extraneous pasuk that's found by Pesach Sheni, that not only by Pesach Rishon is there a mitzvah of etzem lo tishberu bo, and then the Torah tells you, Pesach by Pesach Sheni, and then it mentions again, etzem lo tishberu bo. So Gemara wants to know, why did it have to bring etzem lo tishberu bo again? That comes to teach you, Rabbi Shem Menasi Omer, echad etzem sheish bo moach, whether the bone has marrow inside of it, which is edible, and then would be subject to the mitzvah of achilat korban pesach, as Rashi notes over here, v'achlu et basar b'layla zed, is a mitzvah to say to eat the korban pesach. So then, that mitzvah to say would demand that you eat the marrow in the bones. There's a mitzvah lo to say up against it, which is etzem lo tish biru bo. And so now what Rava is pointing out is that we have a din that Rabbi Shimon Hasu says, that despite the fact that there's a mitzvah to say, to eat the marrow, we still say that the etzem lo tishbru bo overrides. And therefore, we don't say, I say, doche lo tasei, by the mikdash. And that is, ben, it's an etzem sheish bo moach, etzem sheim bo moach, there's still a restriction of etzem lo tishbru bo, am I? Why is that true? Nei te asei, vilit chet lo tasei. Why isn't the asei, irvachlu et the basar belayla zekam, and override, ve'etzem lo tishbru bo. So, ela, ein asei doche lo tasei shebe mikdash. This is paradigmatic in nature, to teach you that asei is not doche lo tasei, Shabbi Mikdash. Now the Bali Tosafot over here suggests that the nature of the question is Kehachi Parich. Klomer, Mihocha Nigmar. Why don't we learn from here and extrapolate this to in general? That Ein Asei Doche Lo Tasei. Balma. In general, why don't it become the paradigm to tell you that that's the din? Ela Vadai B'Mikdash Shaini. So what the Bali Tosafot would say over here, that when Rava says Ein Asei Doche Lo Tasei Shabbi Mikdash, the reason that he's adding on B'Mikdash is to teach you that this does not become paradigmatic in nature, and teaches a din that applies to all asei and lo tasei. It only has application in the world of Kodashim, and it becomes a paradigm within the world of Kodashim, that ein asei doche lo tasei, because the pasuk goes out of its way to teach you that etzem lo tishbru bo, despite the fact that there is a mitzvah asei v'achlu et basar b'layla zeh, and that should have overridden, and the Torah comes and says, don't let it override. We're not going to allow an asei to doche lo tasei in this case. So now, the Bali Tosafot raise a serious question over here with regards to this whole Hava Mino of the Gemara, especially with the relationship of the Etzim Lo Tishbru Bo. That is because we know from the Gemara in Yevamot that there are certain qualifications that allow for Asei to Doche Lo Tasei. One of those qualifications is that you're unable to accomplish the mitzvah in any other way. Its only way to accomplish this mitzvah is if you invoke the principle of Asei Doche Lo Tasei. Without that possibility, that you can't accomplish the mitzvah. So examples of that are Yibum. By the case of Yibum, it's impossible to perform Yibum, Elaim Kain, you violate the Isser of Eshadach. Or, in the case of Kilayim B'Tzitzit, the only way to put Tzitzit on a Beged Pishtan is to have Kilayim. Because by definition, the Techelet is made out of wool. It's the only way that you can have Tzitzit on a Beged of Pishtan is to have Kilayim. And therefore the Asay is Doche Lo Tasei. Or there's a dispensation to say that it overrides in that case. Because it's impossible. There's no other way to accomplish mitzvah. Elim Kain, you violate the lo tasei. That's the only possibility. But if there's a possibility of doing the asei without violating the lo tasei, then you don't have a right to invoke asei doche lo tasei. There is another principle that is brought in the Gemara there, which is beidna, that it happens to happen simultaneously, which is that we only allow you to do an asei doche lo tasei when the asei that you accomplish is simultaneous or concurrent with the lo tasei that you're violating. It can't be that you violate the isur, and then afterwards you do the asei. It has to be that they are, at the same moment that you're doing the violation, the asei is mikuyam. And on this, Tosfot asks, at the end of the second Tosfot over here, it says, miu, akati kasha, heichi ati hayasei, bedachi lo tasei. How is it possible that Gemara has a havamin over here, that the etzem lo tishbru bo should be overridden by, bachuat avasar b'lai lazeh? Because be'idna dimitaker lav, because at the point that you're violating the law of Shvirat Etzem, lo mekayem asei da'achila, you do not accomplish the mitzvah asei of eating the korban. It is a facilitator. It is not happening concurrently at the same time. You must break the bone first, and then you only accomplish the mitzvah asei. So the Bali Tosafot leave that as a tzarachion. How come the Gemara here is not worried about that issue of it being concurrent? Now, what's amazing is that in the Piskei Tosfot over here in Zvachim, he has a huge chiddush, which is then picked up by other Rishonim, trying to explain or to understand this issue of Be'idna. And that is that the Piskei Tosfot say, Im yi'efshar l'kayem asei be'inyan acher, lo be'inan be'idna. If there's no other way to accomplish a mitzvah asei, you do not need it to be simultaneous. Z'me'akar lav l'kayem asei. Because the violation of the lav is the facilitator for the asei. It's exactly our case over here. What he's saying is that be'idna doesn't literally mean simultaneous or concurrent, but it means that the only way to accomplish the asei is by violating the lo tasei. Over here, the only way to get the marrow inside the bone is to break the bone. And therefore, the breaking of the bone, even though it's not simultaneous or concurrent with the eating or the accomplishment of the mitzvah of eating the korban of Pesach, nevertheless, it is still classified as an asei doche lo tasei, as if it is simultaneous, because it is the only way to get access to the marrow. It's the only way to accomplish this mitzvah. And therefore, being ma'akir the lav is okay in order to facilitate the assay. And that is then quoted by Rekiva Eger and by other Rishonim and Achronim with regards to this issue of the Be'idna. And there are Rishonim and Achronim that disagree with that point. And through that, the Noda Be'udah actually comes up with a new way to view the Gemara over here, which is Ravashi Amar Yikdash. Ravashi says that the Pasuk says Yikdash Asehu. That's a mitzvah asay. Vein asay doche et lota asay v'asay. An asay can't override both an asay and a lota asay. Because the word Yikdash now tells you that, number one, there's a lota asay to eat that which is pasul. But number two is that when it comes into contact with the item that is pasul, Yikdash, it takes on the properties of that item. And then there's a mitzvah asay now not to violate the pasul over here from the word Yikdash. The Sfat Emet, he says Yikdash is just a code word for telling you that there's a mitzvah asay to rid oneself of psulei hamukdashim. That there's a mitzvah asay to burn or destroy psulei hamukdashim. And so that's what the word yikdash. Yikdash doesn't mean there's a mitzvah asay over here of yikdash. It means that the psul has a demand that you rid yourself of it. And that's what the property of that psul is now embedded into this item. And that's the mitzvah asay that we're speaking about here. So that's what Ravashi answers. He says that it's a lot asay and an asay. And many people ask, how did Ravashi solve the problem? Ravashi's solution is only valuable if you're talking about a psul. You're talking about something that's psul that was absorbed by something that's kasher. And if that's the case, for instance, by etzim lotish berubo, where there was no absorption, there's no ikdash over there, why is it asay doche lot asay according to Ravashi? And so that's what the Noda Be'udah points out, that many people ask, how did Ravashi solve the problem? He solved the problem for psul that is absorbed by something that's kasher, but he didn't solve the problem for etzem lotish berubo. Because over there is no mitzvah asay of yikdash. And therefore, the Noda Be'udah claims that the machloket here between Rav Ashi and Rova is about this item that is brought in the Piskei HaTosfot. And that is, when is it considered to be simultaneous to invoke the principle of asay doche lot asay? Rova subscribes to what the Piskei HaTosfot say. That is that even if it's not simultaneous, but it's a facilitator, that's good enough to allow asay doche lot asay. Therefore, Rava has to say, asay doche lot asay doesn't apply in the Mikdash, because of etzem lo tish biru bo. And that's why he gets out of the problem, both by Pesach, as well as the problem over here, by the kasher overriding that which is pasul. Rav Ashi disagrees with that principle of the Piskei Tosafot. He says that it has to be simultaneous. If it's not simultaneous, there's no din of mitzvah asay doche lot asay. So Rav Ashi, in essence, doesn't have to answer the question about the bone. Because etzem lo tish biru bo can never be simultaneous with the accomplishment of the mitzvah of eating the Korban HaPesach. If that's the case, then there's no hava mina of asay doche lot asay. And therefore, he doesn't have to answer the question with regards to Pesach. The only place he has to answer the question is with regards to psul that is absorbed by something that's kasher. And there he says that there's a mitzvah asay of ikdash. And through that, the Noda Be'udah explains that machloket here between Rav Ashi and Rava, as well as why Ravashi's answer, even though it doesn't solve the problem of etzem lo tish biru bo, in essence, doesn't need to solve that problem, because Ravashi believes that that's not a candidate for asay doche lot asay. But again, this is very fundamental to the concept of asay doche lot asay, as to when we invoke that principle, and do we allow you, when it's a facilitating event, to violate the Isser first, to only allow you later on to accomplish the mitzvah asay. And again, the Noda Be'udah brings numerous other cases where if you did invoke that principle, it would be very problematic. And therefore, he says the Piskei HaTosfot is incorrect, and Rav Ashi over here is taking a stand against that view of the Piskei HaTosfot, and again, against Rava's position that that's considered to be a candidate for asay doche lot asay. So Gemara says, Ashkechan chatat demitkadesh bebalua. We see that a chatat has this impact, that when there's absorption, that it's mikadesh, meaning that kol hashei gabi b'sarai dash, because that's written in the parshia that deals with Zotarat HaChatat. Shar Kodashim Minalan. How do I know that it impacts another Kodashim? Amar Shmuel, Mishum, Rabbi Lazar, Zot HaTorah La'ula, V'la Mincha, V'la Chatat, V'la Hasham, V'la Miluim, U'la Zeva HaShlamim. So that's the posuk that's found in Parshat Tzav by the Miluim. And there is a hekesh between all the different Korbanot over there. And now the Braita that we're going to bring over here is going to give us the limud from each of these items. La'ula. Why are all the korbanot compared to an ola? Ki ola. That they have the same din as an ola. Ma'ula tu'na kli. Af kol tu'na kli. Just like an olah requires a kli sharet to be processed, so too all the other korbanot. My kli, what exactly is the kli sharet that's necessary by an olah? Ilei mamizrak, if it is to capture the dam, the kabbalat the dam has to be in a kli sharet, the shalmei tzibur and namik tifu. We also have that by the shalmei tzibur by Har Sinai, where it says there, vaykach Moshe chatzi adam v'yasem ba'aganot. So there you see there's a kabbalat the dam in a kli sharet. And therefore, we could already learn that from the Shlamim, as we're going to see later on. The Shlamei Tzibur play a role in this Hekesh that is here. Therefore, we don't need the Olah to teach us that. We could have learned it from the Shlamei Tzibur. Ela de Sakin comes to teach you the din that you need a knife. V'olah gufa min olan. How do you know that an Olah requires a knife in order to do the Shechita? Dichtiv, because it says, by Avram Avinu, by Shlach Avram et Yado, by Ikach et Amachelet, and it says that he takes the knife in order to shecht his son Yitzchak, v'hatam olahu dichtiv. And we know that when he's going to do that, it was an olah, because afterwards when he puts the ayol on Mizbeach instead of Yitzchak, it says, ve'olei olei olah tachet beno, that he put it as an olah instead or in place of his son. So he was working with an olah, and over there it says, ve'ikach et ha-machelet, that he has to take a machelet, a knife. Baitos, but over here, say there are actually two dinim that are learned from here, because the Gemara in Chulin says, ve'ikach, teaches you that it has to be talush. It can't be something that's attached to do the shvita, and machelet teaches you that it has to be a knife. What din comes out of here is actually machloket Rashi in the Valiat Tosafot. Rashi on the top of Sari Chet Amud Aleph says, what does it mean, el sakin? Lishchita. You need a sakin for shvita. Lafuke. To tell you that you can't use a tzur, you can't use a rock, vikaneh, and you can't use a reed. De kli sharet ba'inan. Rashi says over here that there's a requirement for kli sharet with regards to shvita. Therefore, the knife has to be a kli sharet, otherwise it's not a kosher shchita. And that also seems in the position of the Reinu Tam, and the Tosfot over here that explains that Vayikach teaches you it has to be talush, and Machela teaches you you need a kli, because he says kli is only relevant by the din of Kodeshim. And that seems to imply that you need a kli sharet in order to do the shchita over here. The Balei Tosfot back in the beginning of Ezum Kuman have a discussion about this, and they show that the Gemara in other places seems to indicate that you can use a kaneh. If you make it into a kli, you can use a kaneh in order to shech the kodoshim. So how can you say that there's a requirement for kli sharet? And they indicate that there is not a requirement for kli sharet over here with regards to the knife, but there's just a requirement for kli. So Tosfot says there is a requirement of kli, there is a requirement of sakin, it just doesn't have to be a kli yafeh, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a kli sharet. And he disagrees with the Rabbeinu Ephraim, who he brings over there, that suggests you don't even need a knife at all to do the shechita, because of the absence of a requirement of kli sharet in the Mishnayot in Ezum Mekoman with regards to the shechita. But Tosfot or Doche that reasoning, and in the end say that you do need a sakin, and you do need a kli, something that is not offensive to bring before a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's not hakriveinu na lepechatcha. That's not something that is below the dignity of the Mikdash. So therefore you can't use a stone to do it. But you can use something that is a kli, even if it's not a kli sharet. Because otherwise you have to deal with the fact that the kaneh, which is made out of wood, how does it become a kli sharet? Because then it would only be according to, as we saw yesterday, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda's position, that wood can be made into a kli sharet. But he does say that the Gemara, in a number of places, says that the shchita, by the knife, is mikadesh the animal, is mikadesh the korban. And that is not because it's a kli sharet necessarily, but because the act of shechita with the kli itself is what creates that kedusha. So that's the machlok between Rashi and Tosfot as to what the demand is over here. Then the Gemara says, mincha. What's the mincha doing in the hekesh over here? Ma mincha ina nachelet ele zichrei kuna. Just like a mincha is only eaten by the zichrei kuna. Av kol inam nechalim ele zichrei kuna. So too, all the korbanot, at least the kodshei kodeshim, can only be eaten by zichrei kuna. Mayhi, ichatat v'asham. If you need the mincha to tell you about a chatat v'asham, be'ejuktibu, says by them, kol zachar b'kohanim yochlena. Rashi of Tzadichet Amud Aleph says, how come the Gemara didn't bring an asham and a chatat, where it also says that it has to be eaten by the zichrei kuna? Rashi says the reason is, because there it says, kodshei kodashim hu. Because there the pasuk specifically states that it's a zichrei kuna, and associates it with the fact that it's kodshei kodashim. But then, it does not allow you then to extrapolate to other items that don't say kodshei kodashim by them. And therefore we need the mincha, which doesn't have that limitation, to tell us the din of zichrei kuna. E shalmei tzibur, if it's the shalmei tzibur, mi ribuye tekraati. We already know that from the pasuk in Parshat Korach, which says, Kol b'kodesh, b'kodesh hakodoshim tochalenu, kol zachar yochal uta. They're actually not quoting the part of the pasuk that they use for the limud. The limud comes to the last three words in the pasuk that they don't quote, which is b'kodesh hakodoshim tochalena, kol zachar yochal uta, kodesh iyelach. And as Rashi notes on Sarichetam and Aleph, kodesh iyelach is similar to the phraseology that's used by the Shalmei Tzibur of the Kivzei Atzeret, Kodesh Yiyu LaHashem LaKohen. So that terminology, which is very similar, phraseology that's similar, teaches you that Limei Al Shalmei Tzibur Sheinam Ne'achalim LaZichrei Kuna. The Zichrei Kuna get the right to eat the Shalmei Tzibur, which are Kodeshei Kodashim. So then, what are you learning from Mincha? To which Korban are you learning that only Zichrei Kuna learn it? Where it says Tanaehi, that's a Machloket Tanaim. Ika Danafkala Mehocha, Ika Danafkala Mehocha. Some learn it out from the Pasuk in Parshat Korach, and some learn it out from the Mincha. So, the one who doesn't learn out the Pasuk in Korach learns from the Mincha that Zichrei Kuna eat the Shalmei Tzibur, whereas the one who says that the Shalmei Tzibur learned from Korach, he needs to use Mincha for something else, and we'll see, there's going to be an alternate brayta that comes up later on that gives alternative things to learn from the Korbanot that are over here. Chatat is mentioned in the Pasuk. Ma chatat mitkadeshet bibalua. Avko mitkadeshet bibalua. That was the Gemara's question. How do we know that this extends beyond the chatat? This din of kol asher yiga bibsara yigdash. How do we know that that din applies not only to the chatat, but to other korbanot? That's what comes out of the hekesh over here. Just like the chatat, when it comes into contact with other items, and there's bliut from it, it changes the dynamic of that other item. So too, all kodashim that are absorbed will change the dynamic of the item into which they are absorbed. Asham is mentioned in that pasuk. What does that teach you? Ma asham ein shafir v'shalya kadosh bo. Just like by an asham, the fetus, the fetal sac, are not kadosh. Av kol ein shafir v'shalya kadosh bo. So too, in any korban, that is also true. Kasavar, this mandamar must believe, vladot, kodoshim behavyatan hein kadoshim, that a vlad or a fetus only becomes kadosh at the moment it is born, not when it is in utero. Vidanim, in addition, he must believe danin efshar mishei efshar, that you're allowed to learn something that's impossible to teach you about something that is possible. How do you know that by an asham the shvir and the shalya are not kadoshim? That's because an asham is a zachar, it's a male, so it can never have a shvir and a shalya, and for that reason there is no din of Kodesh of Shvir Shalya by an Asham. So then you're taking that din and applying it to Korbanot that do have a female animal there. And that's what it means. This Tana believes that you can dan me Efshar from Asham to things that are Efshar, like a Chatat or a Shlamim, which can come from a female, that which is inside of them is not Kadosh. Now Rashi claims over here that what's not Kadosh is the fats of the fetus don't have to go on the Mizbeach. Even though the fats of the mother go on the Mizbeach, the fats of the fetus do not have to go on the Mizbeach. On the other hand, the Bayit Tosfot don't love that explanation, because it sounds like from Rashi, it's the fats that aren't Kadosh, but the remainder of the animal is Kadosh. Because Tosfot says the only reason you would think that the fats have to go on the Mizbeach is if you believe that the fetus is actually Kadosh. But that goes against the position of this Tana, because he says that the fetus is in Kadosh until it's born, not while it's in utero. And therefore, the Bal Yitzchok believe near the Faresh, Din Chulin Gmurim Kayolif. The Shvir Shalya Nimtza Bebeten Chatat, the Chashvita Inan Kedoshim Klal. They have no Kedusha whatsoever. Not just the fats inside of them, but entirely they have no Kedusha whatsoever. It's possible Rashi meant that as well, which is that he's just saying to you, you might have thought that these fats go on the Mizbeach like the fats of the mother, and it's coming to dispel that fact, but that doesn't mean that the remainder of the animal is Kadosh, because you wouldn't have had a Havamin that the remainder is Kadosh. We're just talking about the items that would go on the Mizbeach. So it might be that Rashi doesn't necessarily argue on the Bayit Tosfot, although the Bayit Tosfot themselves think that Rashi is disagreeing with them. And then we have the Miluim. Ma Miluim Motrehem Bisrefa. Just like Miluim, that which is left over has to be burnt. Vein Balei Chayim B'Motrehem. And there is no live animal that is left over. Avko Motrehem Bisrefa. So too, any leftovers, any notar by the korbanot that are psulim or have gone past their expiry have to be burnt. Vein Balei Chayim B'Motrehem. And there's no notar by something that's alive. So what they're speaking about here is when you separate an animal, the achrayut. If a person wants to be sure that he's going to bring a chatat, so he separates two animals and says, this one is my chatat, the other one's my backup in case I lose this chatat. Or in a case where he actually lost the chatat, and he separated a new chatat and then found the original one. In those cases, the additional animal is not deemed notar when you bring the first korban. In general, when you have a live animal that's brought in as a backup, that animal doesn't get the din of notar, is not considered to be left over. And that's because by the Miluim, they were Korbanot Tzibur. By the Korbanot Tzibur, we don't find, first of all, that they were lost in the Miluim. And number two is, we don't take out extra ones for Achrayut. Shlamim, ma shlamim, mifaglim, umitfaglim. Afkol, mifaglim, umitfaglim. Just like by Shlamim, which is the paradigmatic source for Pigul in the Torah, we learned that earlier on in the Sefta, that din of Pigul is applied from the Shlamim to other Korbanot. And here Rashi explains mifaglim umitfaglim, which is that the Korban Shlamim itself is able to be mifagel. It affects the sachim that come along with it, that if the Shlamim is made into Pigul, it also makes the Nisachim into Pigul. And that's what it means, Mifaglim u-Mitpaglim. Whereas the Bayit Tosafot say Mifaglim and Mitpaglim is, the Mifagel is the Dam, that is the thing that causes the Pigul to happen, because it's one of the Arba Avodot that's done with the Dam that allows you to have the Machshava of Chutz Lizmano. And the Mitpagel is the Basar of the Shlamim, is affected by the Machshava that you have by the Avodat Dam of the Mifagel. By those words, see the Mifagel as the Dam, the Mitpagel as the Basar. As Rashi says, the Mifagel is the Shlamim, and the Mitpagel is the Nisachim. Okay, we're going to stop here, 11 lines down on the top of Tzadichet Amud Aleph, and tomorrow we'll continue with an alternate Braita that comes in the name of Rabbi Akiva instead of the one that brought here in the name of Rabbi Elazar, that has alternate Rashot for the words that are found in this Pasuk in Pashat Tzav.